Dear listeners, Sairam from Prashantinilam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say, and the new year has begun, 2016. In fact, when I contemplated on the new year morning, on what 2016 could mean for me, a beautiful thought emerged. 2016. I felt there are two things in life which are most important. And the first thing is love. And the second thing, guess what? More love. Because somehow, if you want to have anything which is equivalent to love, which is as important as love, there's nothing in this world which is equate to love. So there are two things most important I felt for this new year are love and more love. Because love is the answer to every naughty problem in our life, isn't it? So that is the significance of two for me in 2016. So what is zero? Zero is a reminder, a beautiful reminder that we are actually zeros. Isn't it? Sometimes someone who has lived in Prashantinilam and who has studied in Bhagwan school and colleges and interacted with so many people who have been touched by the love of Bhagwan, you know, I shudder to think what would our life been if he did not take our hand at the right time, at the right moment. Whatever we are that zero, and if we have become anything, because he has held our hand. And every time when you remember that you are zero and you are nothing, that is when actually things happen, because only when you let go, then you let God take over. And to let go, you have to know that you are a zero. In fact, if you think about it, how many things in life do we really have control? Do we really know what is going to happen tomorrow? We plan so many things. We have so many dreams and imaginations. But we actually do not know for anything to happen. Even for the very fact that I'm speaking to you now and you're listening to me, so many things have to fall in place, isn't it? Right from the fact that I should have the time, that I have not fallen sick, that this system should work, that you are listening, which means you could take some time out, and if there is someone else listening, so many things have fallen in place. And do we have any control about anything? And sometimes when we achieve something, we say, oh, we have done it. How fallacious, how empty is it, isn't it? But when you know that you are a zero, then you let go and you let him take over. So that is the next beautiful thought that came, to remember that we are zeros. 2016 and one, I felt, you know, we are all zeros, but if you have done anything, if you are able to accomplish anything, it is because in those moments the hero was with us. You can have any number of zeros, but without that one standing to the zeros have no value. And it's the same with us. How meaningless our life would have been if we were not guided at the right time. If our life has value, it is because he is attached. He has given that value. He has lent himself to us in those moments. And that is why we have achieved whatever we have achieved. If any times we have smiled, because he has enabled it. So to always remember that I am a zero, and next to the zero is this one. That is what 2, 0, 1. And then 6. 6 occurred to me as the continuous striving of every person on this planet to overcome those 6 weaknesses that are part of every person. To some extent, every person is trying in his own way, in her own way, to get over these 6, Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya. And the way to overcome them is to hold on to the hand of the hero, know that you are a zero, and to believe in love. Because love can cure anything. Love can solve any problem. Personal, interpersonal, social, national, international, to intrapersonal. So that is the beautiful message that came to me, 2016. And even as I was dwelling on this, I thought, you know, we should take inspiration from people who have been successful in doing this, who have been successful in holding on to love, who have been successful in holding on to him as their hero, who have been able to obliterate themselves and make themselves zero and then conquer these six unpleasant weaknesses in our lives. And when I looked at where can I find such personalities, where are those individuals who have done on themselves such magic that God was so proud of? Who are those individuals who have become such an eternal source of inspiration, not for them but for generations? People who have become trailblazers, people who have become torchbearers for all of us who are on this path of love, who are on this path of achieving that permanent peace, that permanent love. And when I thought about such individuals whose lives could become now pointers for us about how we should lead our life, how we could reorient our lives, I was reminded of what once Bhagwan told Mrs. Rani Subramanyam, an extremely dedicated spiritual seeker who came to Bhagwan way back in 1950. In fact, we have had a series of articles by her on Radio Sai about the spiritual interactions that she had with Bhagwan during all those decades of wonderful proximity with Swami. On one occasion, when she was seeking from Swami about her spiritual path and she was asking if she should do any reading, Bhagwan said, "Different authors will only confuse you with their contradictions. Great philosophical and intellectual discussions are not of so much meaning when you are on this path. If you want to read," Swami said, "read the lives of saints." It could be any saint, Christian saint, Muslim saint, Hindu saint, whomever. Because these are the people who have gone on that path. They don't talk from their head. Their life speaks. They have done that journey. They have been there, done that. Their path is very clear. They know the pitfalls, they know the challenges, they know the obstacles. So their life will indicate to you what problems could come. And they will tell you how they could become a good example, and in the process you will also become a good example. In fact, this was Bhagwan's direction not only to spiritual seekers. In fact, I remember on so many occasions when Bhagwan was speaking to students also, when someone would ask, "Swami, what should boys read apart from their subjects?" You know, Bhagwan always mentioned about, yes, general knowledge, practical knowledge, and your secular knowledge, yes. But what else should boys read? And Bhagwan used to always mention that they should read the lives of saints. And I thought, what better way to spend this fresh year than ruminate on the lives of saints? And the moment the word saint is mentioned, if you are someone who has seen Bhagwan at close quarters, your mind will be just filled with Mira, because it was such an indelible connection with Bhagwan. Whenever the word Mira was mentioned, whenever the name Tyagaraja was mentioned, you can see Bhagwan's eyes just overflowing. Something used to happen. It's almost like something used to revel in his being. In so much, these saints have captured the hearts of the Lord to such an extent that, you know, when he came down, even after so many years, when he came down as Satya Sai, even when he mentions, he remembers those names, and even then, just their thought, just softens him so much. In fact, there was one occasion in Kodaikanal, and Bhagwan was with the boys, and just like he would do, Swami one day gave money to all the boys and told, go and do your shopping. And Bhagwan would be very curious to see what each person has bought, and there would be a very beautiful session, each person showing to Bhagwan what they have bought and for how much they have bought, and it would be a very, very interesting, Bhagwan would sort of let his hair down, and it would be a very, very informal, but with Bhagwan there is nothing like a moment which is casual, even if he is joking. So someone showed Bhagwan the shawl that he has bought for his mother, someone showed a sari that he has bought for his sister, someone showed the earring that is bought for his sisters, and then one boy, he had picked up a statue of Meera. I thought, given Bhagwan's fondness for Meera, Swami would like it. So when Bhagwan asked, what did you get? So he showed this statue of Meera and said, Swami, I have brought Meera. Swami said, you have not brought Meera. You have brought a statue of Meera. And then he pointed to his own heart and said, Meera is here. It's like it is my Meera. Meera, Meera. Meera is here. That is the indelible connection between Meera and Sai Krishna. And it is the same. It was the same with Radha too. Whenever Bhagwan talked about love, invariably he would talk about Radha's love. Just like Arjuna was meant to be that instrument for the world to know about Bhagavad Gita, Radha was that instrument beautifully crafted to demonstrate to the world what is love, what is supreme love. In fact, there's a very beautiful song which so aptly describes this amazing relationship that both these devotees had to the Lord. Mira. One can go on elaborating on the various facets of their love. I remember on one occasion, very beautifully, Bhagwan took the word Radha and said, you know what is Radha? It is the dhara of Aradhana. In fact, if you take R-A-D-H-A, A is for Aradhana. It is the Aradhana. The stream of this Aradhana is what is Radha. And what is Mira? Mira is that saga of mergence with the Lord. What if I tell you the story of someone who is the best of Radha and the best of Mira? What if I tell you the story of someone who is an amazing confluence of this passionate love that Radha had for Krishna and this complete surrender that Mira had for her beloved? What if I tell you the story of someone who loved the Lord crazily, loved the form of the Lord crazily, like Radha did, and ultimately became like the form of the Lord? At the same time, who felt the presence of his beloved so palpably within and without that ultimately just merged. It is the story of someone who has become a part of the life of every Tamil-speaking South Indian family. Someone whose works are so incredible that even today commentaries are written 15 centuries after it emerged. Something like the Bhagavad Gita. Someone whose worship with so much of devotion and with great discipline in this month, which is the Tamil month of Margari, which is also called Dhanurmasam. Someone who made that fantastic journey of femininity to divinity, and in the process has become an eternal source of inspiration for eternity. A colossus of inspiration. Saint Andal of Srivelliputtur. This is the month where every Vaishnavite household in Tamil Nadu chants the Tirupave composition, which was a gift of Saint Andal. And I thought, why not begin this Radio Sai series on the lives of saints with a dedication to the Mother Goddess, especially in this month? They say if you chant Tirupave in this month, it is almost equal to chanting this 1,000 times in any other month. And among the months, Lord Krishna says, I am this month, I am this Margali month, among all the months. Just like he says, among the rivers, I am the Ganges, and among the animals, I am the lion. Similarly, among the months, I am this month of Margali. It's the most auspicious period, which culminates with Pongal. So with prayers to Bhagavan, we begin this series on the life of saints. So that is what we are going to do today. The next 40 minutes or so in this last lap of Thursday Live, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to this new series. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The time in the studios now is 9 o'clock, 9 p.m. and we begin Saints, the Soul of India. And fortunately for me, I have with me in the studios a long-standing devotee of Bhagwan, a lady devotee to discuss about Anda, Mrs. Lalita Shekhar, someone who has spent more than 20 years basking in the love of Mother Sai, someone who has also been blessed by Bhagwan to be an active volunteer in the production of a lot of our programs for the Telugu stream. But today she is here to share her thoughts in English on the life and works of Anda. Welcome, Mrs. Lalita Shekhar, to Saints, the Soul of India.
Sairam Vishu, thank you so much for allowing me to come and participate in this wonderful program. And all the best for Saints, the Soul of India. I'm sure all our listeners would love to listen to your program.
So, you know, as I was reading about Andal, I did not know anything about her until probably 2 days ago. And someone suggested, why not Andal? And I said, okay. And when I read about her life, the way she came onto the earth, the way she was, her life began, is so mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was actually found under a tulsi plant in Srivilluputtur.
Yes.
And her father is an Alvar himself. And Alvars, as we know, they are this group of 12 saints who emerged in the 14th to 9th century in India and who have really revived this whole tradition of devotional worship to the Lord.
Yes.
And what occurred to me as I was reading is, you know, this was a time in the history of Indian civilization where Jainism and Buddhism had really taken hold so much of Indian psyche, and the space from which Jainism and Buddhism come, because of the way Lord Buddha renounced everything, the way Lord Mahavira also renounced everything, you know, you almost lost body consciousness. So it was actually tending to asceticism.
Mm-hmm.
There was so much of a flavor of, you know, if you want to be spiritual, you have to give up everything, home and heart, and, you know, then lead a life. So if you're in the world and trying to do something, then, you know, you're probably not spiritual.
Yes.
It is sacrilegious.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be spiritual, if you want to go to God, then, you know, leave everything and you know, follow your path. You go to the jungle or whatever. Go wandering as a monk. That was sort of the state of mind at that point in time. And if you see, all these series of Alvars came at that point, and they actually raised this devotional consciousness of people in their daily life. They brought in spirituality into their daily life.
Yes.
Isn't that? That's so wonderful, because, you know, now just like Andal has become a part of everybody's life. It became a part of their morning rituals. It's become a part of, in every marriage she is remembered, in every ceremony to do with any girl child she is remembered. So this whole concept of bifurcating spirituality and keeping it in a corner was totally sort of dismissed, totally overcome when you had this series of saints who lived in the world. But they said that, you know, you can live in the world, but at the same time love the Lord intensely.
Be a part of the world, but then let not the world be a part of you.
Yes.
Yeah. That is what they had proven.
Mm.
So being a part of the world and having their own families and leading a family life, still they were able to propagate such high levels of spirituality.
Yes.
That God and the love for God had become a daily practice for them. It's,
yes,
it's become a part of their lives.
Absolutely. Like, I remember two things that Bhagwan used to say. One is, hands in the society and head in the forest.
In the forest.
You know, you can be doing whatever you are doing, but, you know, your focus can be on something eternal. You have to do things because you are in the world.
Yes.
But
and whatever you do it for the love of God and to,
yes,
please the Lord.
Yes.
As an offering to the Lord.
Yes. And spirituality is a very beautiful definition that Bhagwan once gave. He said, what is spirituality? Spirituality is spirit of love.
Hmm.
That is what is spirituality.
That is beautiful, yes.
Spirit of love is spirituality. So you have Sri Vishnu Chitta, who is the supposed father of Andal.
Who had the great fortune of bringing her up as,
yes,
his own daughter.
Yes. So he finds her under a tulasi plant, very beautiful girl, and he is really drawn to the girl, and he brings her home and he raises the child. But before we go to that, you know, to me it's very significant that she was found under a tulasi plant. Isn't it?
Yes. Tulasi being considered very, very sacred for us, and she being found under a tulsi plant is very, the appearance of her itself is very significant. That itself proves her sacredness and the purpose that she had come here for.
Yes. The divine origin.
Yes.
And, you know, when you think about tulsi, I'm reminded of, you know, how she is so revered so much as a goddess in so many households. Mm-hmm. In fact, I come from Orissa and I know, you know, they revere tulsi. They call her by Brindavati. That is the name that is given to Tulasi Ma. It is not a plant, you know. It is always considered as a very living thing. In fact, they would put bangles on the plant. They would put her sari and everything. It was almost like she's a goddess.
Yes, and I come from Andhra Pradesh. And you know the main deity or the most important temple in Andhra Pradesh is Tirupati, Lord Venkateshwara. It is said that no matter how many ornaments the Lord wears, the most dearest to the Lord is the Tulsi Mala. So every day the first ornament that is placed is the Tulsi Mala.
Wow.
Tulsi is very, very close and dear to the Lord.
In fact, you know, when I think about it also, I somehow feel that, you know, whatever is passed on to us from the sages, it has a deep significance. Many times we dismiss it because we do not know it, you know. Sometimes we know very little about it, and because we do not know, we think it has no meaning.
Yes.
And science sometimes substantiate it, and you know, very partially, and after many generations, after years. But actually our rishis were such great saints, the great scientists, who knew what is the importance of what. Because Tulasi, when I was reading some time back, it said it is one of those plants which gives out not oxygen, not O2, but it gives out O3.
Really?
Which means any plant gives out only two molecules of oxygen. But tulasi is the only plant in the universe which gives out extra molecule of oxygen. See. So that's why they say, you know, and that's why, see, if you see so beautifully, the sages said that, you know, you keep tulasi in your house.
Right.
That's why you ensure that, you know, your house is purified. It is not as if, you know, you have to be religious and spiritual. You have to, even if you look at it scientifically, now because science is giving us an evidence, but even if science did not give us evidence, if we believed in our sages, we would have benefited.
Right. Very true.
It is so significant. In fact, they say, you know, even Ganges. Ganges is so pure until it comes to a point where, you know, man interferes in a great way and pollutes the river. The Ganges river is so pure that the oxygen content in Ganges is 25 times more than any other river.
Oh. Wow.
25 times. And they say, the scientists have not explained it, they call it the X factor. They don't know how. It has a self-purifying process. They don't know how it happens. So they attribute it to the water that comes to Ganges after having flown over so many herbs in the Himalayas, because it comes through so many herbs, plants like tulasi. That's what adds so much of richness to the water. So anyway, so it's really, to me, it's very significant that, you know, the Lord wanted, in fact, as we see the story of Andal, the tulasi connection, in fact, gets even more interesting.
Yes.
Because after that, you know, she's brought up by Vishnu Chitta, and she's so suffused with this feeling of Krishna consciousness. Because Vishnu Chitta himself, you know, as his name suggests, his chitta was in Vishnu. His mind was on Vishnu.
And as you rightly said, he's one of the Alvars. He was one of the Alvars. And Vishnu Chitta himself was so very dedicated to the Lord. When he found this baby girl, he brought her home and he raised her as his own daughter. Not only that, while raising this kid, he used to feel, Alvars, as you know, are the saints who used to feel themselves or consider themselves as the gopikas, the feminine beloved of the Lord. And Lord is the only Purusha, the only man in the universe. So they had that kind of devotion and dedication of their lives to the Lord. And Vishnuchitta, being one of the Alvars, he had raised this kid imagining himself as Yashoda and the kid as Krishna.
Oh.
So the kid was not only brought up in Krishna consciousness, she was brought up as Krishna by her father. So whenever Vishnuchitta used to place her in the cradle and sing lullabies to her, he always used to imagine himself as Yashoda Ma and the kid as Krishna himself. And when Goda was brought up in such an environment and with so much of dedication towards the Lord, naturally it is only natural for her to develop that love for him.
In fact, you know, as you mentioned this, I'm just reminded of our days in the hostel. You know, when Bhagwan was there, physical form, you know, everything you did, you always wanted to do it for him.
Right.
It was some, that kind of a feel.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that it was in a modern context. It's like, you know, if you know how to sing, you want to sing, not because you want to become a singer, you want to sing because one day I can sing for him. Can sing to him. If I know any bit of art, even if I do not know art, I want to draw something so that one day I become so good that one day probably he will see my art and, you know, he will probably appreciate. You know, if I can do any act, then I want to become part of the drama. You know, whole year you wait for that, when the drama will happen, and if I can play a small role, maybe I will get a photograph with Swami. You know, whole year you wait, okay, if I can do any sport, let me try to get at least one prize so that, you know, there will be one photograph of mine with Swami. So it was that kind of a feeling, you know, whole the consciousness in the hostel used to be that sort of. It's like a competition for devotion.
It's
a competition on who can pray harder and get the Lord attention. Even as you're doing a physics, chemistry, M.Tech, MBA, but this is sort of there in the back of your mind.
So basically, if you're in your studies, if you're participating in any activities or bhajans,
exactly,
anything is done with the sole intention of pleasing the
Lord. Pleasing Him.
So when you live your life like that, the life itself will become a penance.
Absolutely. In fact, I remember, you know, I used to always try for O grade only for that reason, that if at all Swami anytime asked me what is a grade, I should be able to say O grade. Because you'd be very happy and you would give a Padmaskar.
Swami will be very happy to listen.
You'll be very proud. So it was some that kind of an environment, isn't it? I think she was also brought up in that kind of an environment.
Yes.
It's very natural.
It is only natural for her to develop that much dedication and devotion for the Lord and consider Him as the love of her life.
Really. And in fact, you know, when you are in that state, you know, whatever you do, you always want to do the best.
Yes.
And you always want to be the best.
For like, Him.
For Him.
For the Lord.
Yeah, for Him. Because only the best for the Lord.
Only the best for
Him. And the best of me for the Lord. So, you know, you remember when Bhagavan used to come for darshans also, every day, even though the darshan is a daily thing, every day you want to dress nicely.
Yes. Swami always used to dress impeccably.
He used to dress impeccably. I'm telling each one of us, I don't remember even one day going for darshan without shaving. Without, you know, wearing a proper dress or without, you know, combing my hair. No, I think it's the same for everyone.
Everyone, yes.
Every day is a festival.
Everyone wanted to be their best for Swami. Every day.
Every day you want to be the best.
And the Lord also always leads by example. Whenever He came for the devotees, He always wanted to look best.
Yes.
And He also had gone to the lengths to do that, though He did not have to.
Yeah. And I think, you know, so that was, you know, when I read her life, that's how I relate to.
Mm-hmm.
And so Andal, of course at that time she was not called Andal, she was called Godai, the most beautiful one. And so what she used to do is, living along with her father, used to make these garlands for the Vishnu shrine there in Sri Villuputtur. And so slowly Godai took on that job and she used to make these garlands. And you know, as whenever she finishes making these garlands, you know, it's just like, you know, in the hostel we used to make food for Swami. And after you make a dish for Swami, you want to actually taste it. You know?
Yes.
You want to taste it and see if it is good. You know, there could be, somebody might consider it sacrilegious. How can you offering to God? How can, you know, it be something which is already used and already tasted? But you know, when it came to Swami, you didn't think about all that. You told, no, yeah, it has to be good because ultimately it is going to him and it has to be good. You never had that feeling.
It is the same with all of us. Whenever at home we make any prasadam as naivedyam to be offered to the Lord, we always taste it because we want to make sure it is good.
Yes.
You know, nothing is more, nothing is less, it's perfect. Before it goes to the Lord, it should be perfect.
And in fact, someone very beautifully said, you know, we get into this mistaken notion that, you know, just because we have not touched something, it is absolutely pure.
Mm.
They said, you know, you want to offer some, Ganges water, you want to offer some water to the Lord. How do you know that the water is really pure and really untouched? There are so many fishes who are living in the water or waters, and it could be there could be spittle of the fishes there. Is it really that pure? You want to offer a flower to the Lord, but there are so many honeybees who have already taken that honey. Is it really that impeccable?
If you remember, Swami had also mentioned this once. He said, even before you offer it to the Lord, your senses are enjoying it. You see the food, you smell the food. Okay. So most of your senses had already enjoyed whatever offering is being made to the Lord. So it is the intention that matters. It
Absolutely.
Is the heart with what feeling you are offering. Mm. It's not the offering.
Mm. In fact, so what Goda used to do is she used to make these garlands, and once she finishes making a garland, she used to take that garland and wear it herself. It's so interesting. She used to wear it herself, look in the mirror and, is it good? You know, am I looking nice? If tomorrow the Lord wants to see me, am I looking as beautiful as I can look?
Mm-hmm.
So that was the kind of feeling, you know. So every day it was like a fresh feeling of looking very beautiful for the Lord. And is the garland looking very nice?
Mm-hmm.
If the garland is looking gorgeous, then it'll look good on him also.
On him too.
On him too. That was the feeling with which she used to wear the garlands. After she makes, and then she would leave it in the basket for Vishnuchitta to take it to the temple. Vishnuchitta had no clue of this process of Goda. So one day when he is offering this garland to the Lord, he sees that there is a strand of hair in the garland.
Mm.
And he's stunned. He's like shocked. It is sacrilegious. I mean, how could you offer to the Lord a garland which has a strand of hair, which means someone has worn it.
Used it.
Someone has used it. So he's absolutely distraught. He comes home and he asks Goda, and you know, so I think innocently she just narrates what she does, and it is like, for her it is anathema. I mean, how could you ever think of doing something like this?
Mm.
You've made the whole garland impure. And so Vishnuchitta doesn't know what to do. He makes a fresh garland, and he offers it to the Lord. And that night, the Lord comes in the dream of Vishnuchitta and says, Vishnuchitta, what is this garland that you have given me? I am missing the scent of Andal.
Oh.
This garland doesn't have the scent of Andal. Doesn't have the scent of Godai. I want that garland only. Get me that garland.
Mm. So the Lord only looks at the feeling and the purity of thought and intention.
Not the paraphernalia of our devotion.
Yes.
Paraphernalia of our devotion is inconsequential to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
What only matters to the Lord, what is of consequence, is the purity.
Is the purity.
Purity of our
devotion. Of heart and thought.
In fact, that is the moment when she was named as Anda from Goda. Goda meant a beautiful girl.
Mm-hmm.
Andal means the one who ruled over the Lord.
Oh, really?
Andal means one who ruled
over the Lord.
Ruled over the Lord. Because here was the Lord begging. Here's the Lord asking, give me only that garland which Andal, where I can have the scent of Andal.
Hmm.
That's what I want.
Hmm. Actually, if you look at it, we have so many such incidents from our Swami's life. As you mentioned, Vishu, today morning I was sitting with a brother and working on our upcoming program in Telugu Stream, Radio Sai. And for that, I need to go through a lot of content and books. So I came across this very beautiful story, a small story, which I would like to relate to here. In olden days, there used to be a Ganesh shed in Prashanti. And there was a very old lady living there as an inmate. One day, she had a wish to offer betel nut to Swami. If you remember, those days Swami used to have those paan betel nuts. Betel leaf with nut. So she had picked up some betel leaf and nut, and she packed everything in a small cloth pouch And she went to the mandir. And there she had asked, see, I want to offer this to Swami. So, in the veranda. And where can I sit? People there looked at her and she's wearing a very normal clothing and very soiled pouch that she was carrying, and they were a little doubtful, Swami being so very, particular about cleanliness and all of that. We know how he is, how specific he is.
He's impeccable.
He is. So they were a little doubtful and they did not want to, disappoint her, to get disappointed. So they said, there is very little chance that Bhagwan may come down now. So we are not sure, but you can sit here, just to keep her heart. So she sat there and she waited for the Lord, waited for him. And then she fell asleep. She dozed off there. Swami had already gone inside by that time. Then after a while, it so happened that Bhagwan, after his lunch, came down from his residence, went into the veranda, where this old lady was, she dozed off and she was sleeping. Literally, she was sleeping there. He went to her and he woke her up. And then Swami had asked her in his very sweet and soothing tone, Amma, where is the betel leaf and nut that you got for me?
Oh, wow.
And the lady was so thrilled and she was so shocked to see Swami so upfront and close. So she hurriedly took her that black color soiled pouch where she had kept all these things and she was trying to open it, but she was not able to in that all that excitement of seeing him. So Swami very sweetly took the pouch from her hands. He opened it himself and took out the betel leaf and nut. And he had it and he really appreciated her on the taste of all of that. And he blessed her profusely, made her happy. So there are enough and more incidents from our
We have heard it from his scriptures. We have heard about, Sudama. We have heard about
Shabari.
Shabari, such an interesting incident, she biting that right in front of Rama and giving that to Berry to...
We had only read and heard about it, but here are we fortunate enough to see it happen.
In fact, there's another incident as you narrate this. I'm reminded of a brother who used to live with Bhagwan in those days. He narrated this perhaps sometime in the 90s. There was this BCCI concert. There was a 3-day concert which was organized by this organization called BCCI. So you had the leading musicians in the pioneers of Indian art and music. People who are synonymous with their instruments, be it mandolin, be it Zakir Hussain. Everybody had come for 3 days and there was this concert going on. And there was one day evening when Bhagwan is returning after darshan. There was this lady who was sitting somewhere in the 10th or 15th row. And Swami suddenly saw her and Swami beckoned her. She was holding some pouch. It was a pouch. So Swami stretched his hand and he grabbed that pouch and he came. And as Bhagwan nears his residence, the people who really are with Bhagwan, this brother who was serving Swami, generally the practice would be that, if Swami is holding any letter, they would just stretch the hand, just to free Bhagwan's hand, because, he was carrying the letters all the while. So this day, Bhagwan is having letters in his hand and he was having this pouch. So they thought, first let us, so they asked for this pouch from Bhagwan, to free his left hand. Mm-hmm. So Bhagwan was like, he's holding this pouch like it is his heart. He was not giving. So and then Swami gave the letters and then Swami went inside. Mm-hmm. He sat on his chair and he called all these 4 or 5 people. And he opened that bag with so much of excitement. Mm-hmm. And it was a soiled bag. There was so much of light on his face and so much of joy. He opened, what it was? It was soiled groundnuts.
Oh.
Groundnuts. And Swami was like opening each one and he's saying, you eat this. How is it? So there are 4 or 5 of them. And in 5 minutes, the whole place was a mess actually with the groundnut peels. But he was not bothered. Swami was like, enjoy this. Even though the concert was going on, all the leading artists are performing, he was not bothered. Only later, this brother wanted to know what is this love of Bhagwan for this lady. Then they came to know that This is someone many years ago, when there were very few devotees in Prashantinilayam. This lady, from her own fields, she used to make this best of groundnuts. And then she used to go through the whole process of, refining and roasting and everything she used to do. And her only wish was to offer it to Bhagavan.
Oh.
So she had done that for a few years. Only Swami knew what was, you know, in her heart. And you know, now with devotees increasing in crowds, you know, she was just there somewhere.
Mm.
No one recognized her.
But he did.
But he did. No one else need to recognize her.
Yes. Yes. That's why Swami always said, Bhagavan tudu bhava priyadu. He is your indweller. So what he looks at is what is inside of you. Your intentions, the purity of your intention. And nothing else matters to him.
And so that's how we see in this life of Andal. You know, it's a very, very, it's such touching moment, you know, when the Lord is saying that, I'm missing the scent of Andal. I want her.
For the Lord to say that.
Yes, for the Lord to say that. And, you know, again I'm reminded of another very beautiful incident. It happened again in the 90s. It was during Dasara celebrations.
Mm-hmm.
And during these 10 days of Dasara function, you know, there would be days when in the evening there would be cultural programs. And so there was this day when the cultural program consisted of great poets and men of high eminence, mm-hmm, in Telugu literature,
mm-hmm,
performing.
Okay.
And Bhagwan, in fact, made the stage so grand. In fact, everyone was actually sitting on a throne. The kind of thrones that were provided for them is the kind of throne that you generally keep for Bhagwan.
Mm.
So there were like some 8-9 thrones, and all these very, very eminent Telugu scholars and poets were there. And you know, someone is an Astavadhani, someone is a Shatavadhani.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And which means, you know, someone, their level of mastery over the Telugu language is so great that if 8 people ask them questions simultaneously, they can just register who asked what, and you know, they can answer simultaneously all the 8 people
in the same sequence.
Or they could be just given 2 words and told that, you know, you compose a poem which consists of 8 lines and which should convey this also and this meaning also. And in 2 minutes they would be able to do it. I mean, that's such is the caliber of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And that day the audience there, they were mesmerized with the
scholarship.
Yeah, their scholarship and the kind of thing that were coming out of them. It was, mm-hmm, extraordinary. But I remember seeing Bhagwan that day. Bhagwan was sitting on the chair and he was lost. You know, while all the devotees were in awe, but Bhagwan was lost actually. He was, you know, he was just, he had closed his eyes and he was somewhere else. And of course the program got over and, you know, at the end of it, Bhagwan actually materialized a chain for someone and it was a grand function.
Mm-hmm.
The next day was a Kavi Sammelan which was to be done by the students.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So there were a few of us who had written poems. Someone had written in Oriya, someone had written in Telugu, someone had written in Assamese, and the program was each person delivers that to Bhagwan. And I remember that day Bhagwan was on the edge of his seat waiting to listen to every student.
Mm-hmm.
And every person is so ordinary there compared to what was there the previous day. You know, someone is studying in school, someone is just in first year graduation, but he's written some poem, you know. And someone singing, even not even in tune. But for him, this was most important.
Mm.
And at the end of the program, Bhagwan was so happy, so joyous that he came onto the stage. He took a shawl and he covered each boy with the shawl. He personally put the shawl on every person, every boy. And the climax, the grand finale is he took a shawl and he ultimately put on himself.
He did that.
Oh. And then, you know, he called all of us and we had such a fantastic group photograph.
Mm-hmm.
Like touching and hugging the Lord. I mean, there is not a space for even an ant to pass through that, that group.
Everyone must have been, yeah, very thrilled.
Yeah, it was like that, you know. And I remember the sir who was organizing this for us, coordinating this, he said, you know what, when I told him, sir, maybe we should go with rich costumes and all that, because the previous day there was such a grand function, there were poets, he said, let us go like dirt.
Mm.
Let us go like dirt. If he wants, he will make a diamond out of us.
Oh, beautiful.
But we should go like dirt. And I think to me, you know, that is, and I remember the name of the program was Soul Inspirations.
Oh. So apt.
So apt. So I think, as you mentioned, you know, he's always moved by the bhava.
Mm.
And if you look at the life of Andal, and after that it was just all the time so immersed in Krishna consciousness that, you know, nothing else is needed, nothing else is sought after, nothing else seems important, nothing else allures you in the world except him.
And
there comes a time when his father says that, you know, you are of marriageable age and, you know, we have to ensure that you go to another home and begin your life. And that is when Andal says that I have decided who my Lord is. I have decided my partner. And he is the only one.
Mm.
I am already married to the Lord. It was that, and it came with so much conviction. That, you know, even Vishnu Chitta could not challenge it.
Mm.
Because she has already proven her devotion. Because the Lord was asking, in fact, we look at it, the Lord is already wearing the garland that she was making. Already every day the Lord is wearing the garland. Only the Lord had to put a garland on.
Yes.
And that is what happens. In fact, I'm reminded of Meera, you know, how she just saw that idol of Krishna as a child.
Mm.
And a marriage procession is going, and mother says, and she asks the mother, you know, where is my groom? And mother gives the statue of Krishna, and that's all. And that's it. She's done. And it's the same with Arnal. And you know, then the most beautiful thing is the Lord comes in the dream of Vishnu Chitta and says, you dress up Andal as a bride and you bring her to me. You bring her to Sri Rangam, where the Lord resides as Ranganatha, reclining on the serpent
Adishesha.
And at the same time, he comes in the dream of the high priest of
The temple
of Sri Rangam temple, and he says that prepare for the wedding.
Mm.
My bride is coming.
Oh, wow.
My bride is coming. Prepare for the wedding. And the eagerness with which Andal goes for that wedding, she is unable to resist, you know, that irresistible urge to go back to her Lord, to merge with the Lord. And they say that, you know, as soon as he gets down the palanquin in Sri Rangam and sees the Lord, the shrine, she jumps out of the palanquin and she rushes to the shrine, and in a flash, she disappears into Ranganatha. There is no two anymore.
Yes. That's the only union, maybe. The union with the Lord is the only union.
Happiness is union with God.
Yes. Divine union.
In fact, you know, when you read her life, so many insights, so many beautiful reflections, and her compositions, Tiruppavai, which is, you know, sung every day, It is all about the mergence.
Yes.
With the Lord.
Mm.
It is all about this journey of seeing the Lord and merging with the Lord. In fact, in Tiruppavai, there are such powerful verses. Each one is called a pasuram. Each verse which has, the Tiruppavai has, and imagine, they say that Tiruppavai, apart from the profound message, it is such a literary masterpiece in Tamil.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And to imagine, you know, she must have been 9 or 10 years old when this would have just emerged from her. And every stanza of Tiruppavai is so filled with, is meaning, you know, in Pasuram, she says, if pure in body and we dwell on him, and if we sing his praises offering flowers, all our sins of past and now will burn like cotton wool in yawning flames.
Oh, beautiful.
All our sins will just burn away like cotton wool. And towards the end of this Tirupave, there is a very beautiful line where he says, she says, "We ask of nothing paltry, O Lord. In every birth, we should be with you. We should be serving you. Burn any other wish that we have.
Mm.
Let there be no other wish."
So the she has surrendered to the Lord her not only her wishes, but also her right to make any wish.
Wow.
She doesn't want any rights to make any more wishes.
Any more wishes. Yeah, that is fantastic.
That is very nice. I mean, that is actually Tirupava, if we look at it, it is not only, it is definitely the love that Goda has for the Lord is beautifully depicted in that, in all the
Pasurams.
30 Pasurams, right?
40.
Not only that, it also acts as guidelines to us as to how we should offer our love to the Lord.
Yes.
And what is the journey all about, and how do we make the journey and reach the goal? So, if we look at it that way, Vishu, don't you think that music and compositions of music is the simplest and most efficient way of taking us closer to the Lord? Right?
Yes, absolutely.
So, Tirupavai in that way also is the simplest and most efficient tool to take us closer to the Lord. If we look, I may not understand the Vedic scriptures, the Sanskrit verses, but anybody will be able to relate to a musical composition. And Tirupavai has all the requirements to be the most efficient tool to take us closer to the Lord in the right manner, and also show us the right way how to reach Him.
In fact, Tirupavai has, as we mentioned, it has become a part of every Tamil household. In fact, the Tirupavai is something like a Suprabhatam. If you read the Tirupavai,
mm-hmm.
it is all about, you know, awakening, taking everyone together and awakening the Lord and then merging with the Lord.
And if you have observed, it is not Goda who is doing it alone.
Yeah.
She always includes everyone.
Yeah, she wants everyone to join.
Yes, it is a collective
that,
effort.
That is the passion of every saint.
Yes.
It's not me who has to get
liberated. It is never an individual sadhana.
Yes.
They want to
yes.
make as many people part of it as possible, so that most number of people can benefit from their knowledge and their love.
Yes, and more people should experience that love.
Experience that love. They encourage everyone to put in that effort. They make sure that everyone also puts in that effort. So it is beautiful. It is really beautiful. And as you rightly mentioned when we started the program, this is the month where the Tirupavai is sung everywhere in Tamil Nadu as a offering to the Lord, as a ritualistic practice. Sri Krishna, Paramatma in the Bhagavad Gita had told, Masanam Margasirshoham.
Yes.
In all the months, I am the Margasira Masam.
Mm-hmm.
And this is that Masam. And
yes.
We are so lucky that Swami gave us this chance now
yes.
to do this program.
In fact, in Tirupati,
mm-hmm.
in this month, from December 14th to January 14th, in the mornings, the Venkateshwara Suprabhatam is not what is chanted. Tirupava is what is chanted.
Yes. And Tirupavai is considered very, very sacred. It is not just a musical composition. It is very sacred. If you, I'm sure you know this, Ramanujacharya,
yes,
the propagator of Visishtadvaita, he was so fond of Tirupavai. Not only fond, he had considered it as a very sacred text, and he recommended everybody to practice Tirupavai, to recite Tirupavai in this month. So much that Ramanujacharya was also called, or was very fondly called by the people and the followers, as Tirupavai Jiyar.
Oh.
You know, the guru who had propagated Tirupavai.
Oh, wow. In fact, he also included parts of Tirupavai in the
Shodashopachara Puja. Yes.
Mm. Wow.
That is the significance of anything that is done purely out of love for the Lord. Don't you think so?
Absolutely. I mean, when I think about it, you know, Ranganatha, to me that also is very significant, because, you know, Ranganatha means who is the orchestrator
mm-hmm.
of this Ranga. What is this Ranga? I mean, all this color, all this beauty, that creation, he's the orchestrator of everything. And the statue of Ranganatha also, they say it's a Swayambhu. It is something that came on its own.
On its own, yes.
And just like Goda came on her own, here you had the Lord also who had come on her own.
Yes.
It was a beautiful play which was staged to teach mankind such powerful lessons.
Yes.
And today, if you see, the Srirangam is actually one of the biggest. It is the largest functioning Hindu shrines, Vaishnava shrines.
Mm-hmm.
The whole area is actually about 500 acres or more.
Oh, is it?
156 acres. 156 acres,
mm-hmm.
and with a perimeter of 10,000 feet, oh. It's the largest temple in India, one of the largest religious complexes in the world,
mm-hmm.
and the Gopuram, which is called the Raja Gopuram,
mm-hmm.
It is the tallest in Asia.
Oh, is it?
It's the tallest in Asia. And the most interesting thing is when you come to Srivilluputtur and the temple of Andal,
mm-hmm.
again the Gopuram of Srivilluputtur temple, Andal's temple, is so beautiful and so artistically done that actually that has become the insignia of the Tamil Nadu government.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that has become the insignia, the emblem that you see of the Tamil Nadu government. That is part of what is there in Srivilluputtur.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And every time there is this Venkateshwar Kalyanam in Tirupati,
mm-hmm.
the garland comes from Andal's temple.
Yes.
She's the one who offers the garland because she's the concept, you know, femininity to divinity. The Lord really raised her to that stature that she is a goddess. If you have that much love for the Lord, the Lord will say that, you know, you're greater than even me. Yes. Just like he has placed Hanuman on top of all the gods in the Hillview Stadium.
Mm. There is a beautiful, I remember a song that I used to hear when I was a kid. It goes on to describe Rama's compassion for everyone who came to him. It says, brothers he had considered as his own self, you know, extensions of himself. And someone who had come to him as a friend, he made him the emperor of Lanka. And Sugriva also, he had made him a king. But somebody who had surrendered to him and said, I am your servant, he made him a god.
He made him a god. Absolutely. Even a monkey can become God.
Yes.
If you have love for the Lord.
Love for the Lord.
If you have love.
What matters is that purity of love that you have for the Lord. That single pointed focus. Love the Lord just to get closer to the Lord and get the Lord. Nothing else.
In fact, in the Lalita Sahasranamam, there is one name of the mother. You know, you have Nirlepa, Nirmala, Nitya, Nirakara, Nirakula. Nirakula. And when I was looking up the name, meaning of Nirakula, it says, the one who cannot be attained by confused people.
Oh, who cannot be attained by confused
people. Confused people.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to attain the mother, if you have to attain the Lord, you have to be very clear.
Mm. Isn't it so, Bishu? If we look at it, the only confusion that we as human beings have is what to choose. Should we choose the world or should we choose the... because if you want the world, then you have to give up something. Maybe we will not be as close as we want to get to the Lord.
Mm.
I'm not saying we will not get the Lord. But if you want the Lord, then that should be our only focus and goal. So as long as we are confused, the Lord always waits for us to decide. Come out of our confusions.
Yes, yes.
He has all the time and all the patience. So once we are clear and yes. once we are out of confusions. In fact, today, as I said earlier, I was referring to some books, and in one context, Swami had mentioned this, that everything, the world that you see around, is nothing but Prakriti. It's all Prakriti. And there is only one Purusha, there is only one Lord. And that Lord, Prakriti always keeps the Lord in her heart.
Mm-hmm.
So once you worship Prakriti,
worship nature
with the sole intention of getting to the Lord, then she will show you the way how to get the Lord.
She will show you the way.
She will show you the way. So Swami never said that don't participate in the worldly activity.
Yes.
All he said is your focus should be only the Lord.
Yes.
Live in the world, but love the Lord.
Love the Lord. Live in the world, but love the Lord. Wow. Fantastic. Amazing. And I think if you go to every shloka of the Pasuram of Tirupave, there is
you
so much.
You can have one program.
Yeah, we can have. But you know, this whole thing of celebrating the union of Andal with Ranganatha, this was actually done in front of Bhagwan.
Is it?
It was done in front of Bhagwan. We had the Andal Kalyanotsavam in September 2009, and Bhagwan was so eager that day to actually see. He first came and saw how beautifully bedecked Andal was, and he appreciating her beauty, and then he went to interview room. He came out, and that's when the wedding started, and you know, he didn't want to sit on the stage. He wanted to get a clear view of the whole proceeding. He came and sat with the boys down because he wanted to get a straight view.
Really?
Yes. And you know, it was such a beautiful sight, you know, and Swami was very interested in everything that was happening in that wedding. You know, they used to come to Bhagwan, Swami would bless, you know, every article and every ritual. And he was so happily watching this marriage, and it was like his marriage. It was, you know, to me, it is, why is this marriage so beautiful? Because it is merchants with the Lord.
Exactly. The Lord, if we look at it, I'm just a thought, I'm sharing it with you. Lord is always waiting for us.
Yes.
He is all the time waiting when we are ready and when we will wish to go to Him,
yes,
reach Him, want Him, and nothing else. So when there is a celebration that is happening in front of the Lord,
yes,
where a devotee successfully has,
yes,
attained that.
Wow, he celebrates.
He celebrates.
He feels so happy.
He feels so happy.
Finally, this I've got someone who has,
right,
yes,
is,
whose
is
real Kalyanam has happened.
Yes.
That is a real Kalyanam. Kalyanam is referred to as marriage, but that is the real marriage that has
that
to.
That is the real welfare for any human being.
Yes.
The real welfare is, yes, when it can go back to the Paramatma. And so the Lord celebrates, and maybe Swami is waiting for all of us to celebrate all our weddings.
Wow. You know, when I was just listening to a bhajan from yesteryears, and it celebrates this beautiful Lord Ranganatha.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought we should just listen to the joy inherent in this bhajan as we deliberate on this beautiful play of the Lord.
Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga.
Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga.
Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga.
Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga.
Jai Yadunandan Param Niranjan,
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 Rama Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda,
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 Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga,
Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga.
Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga.
Isn't that a very, very celebratory song? Radha Ramana Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Ramana Shri Ranga.
Yes, it is.
So beautiful. You can only imagine how joyous. It's a joyous celebration of the union. And you know, he's the Ranganatha who orchestrates everything. And as he very rightly said, you know, we have to pray that he takes away the right to even for us to wish anything else.
Yes.
And I think that should be our prayer in this new year, and let us pray to Bhagwan that as we have to be with us, we have embarked on this beautiful journey of ruminating on the lives of saints, and let our thoughts elevate to that level where, you know, we are in tune with the Lord like the saints have experienced, and ultimately we experience that mergence with the Lord.
Yes.
So that the Lord revels. Just like you're so happy seeing the marriage of Andal, you know, as you very rightly said, Lord feels that finally one devotee has reached where I want to reach. So I think that is what we should all aim at. That is what we should all pray for. Thank you so much, Mrs. Lalita Shekhar, for being with us on this program and sharing your very beautiful insights. Let us pray that this journey of saints continues and we lose ourselves in this love for the Lord and our life becomes just a saga of His love.
Thank you, Vishu, for giving me this chance to listen to so much wonderful information and insights about Andal and her journey towards the Lord. And as you rightly said, let us all offer a prayer to our Swami to give us whatever it is that we need to wish for nothing else other than Him. Thank you so much. Thank you to all our listeners.
So dear listeners, with that, we've come to the end of this first episode of Saints, the Soul of India. Please do tell us what you feel about this new series. You'd want to have this maybe every alternate Thursday, instead of outside, inside, deep inside. We would have Saints, the Soul of India on some Thursdays, maybe twice a month, and ruminate on the sublime thoughts of the saints on their sacred lives, and that way take inspiration to make our lives the message of the Lord, as shown by these people. The time in the studios now is 9:55. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. It's time to draw the curtains. Thank you so much for being with us all throughout the day. If you have any queries, as always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you to each one of you for being with us and your encouraging mails. It always inspires us. And I am beholden to Swami for this opportunity to share His love and His message. This beautiful Thursday, this new year, the first Thursday of this new year, and we had this chance to share a beautiful episode of someone who is so dear to the Lord. So do keep writing to us and let us offer ourselves at His feet and be in bliss. Thank you so much. As a sign off, you will continue to listen to a drama presented by children from Karnataka. It's entitled Pavitra Jal, Sacred Waters. This was staged in front of Bhagwan on October 3rd, 2015. So enjoy this drama, Pavitra Jal, Sacred Waters. Thank you so much. Sairam.